Welcome back. It is The Drive with Jack, the Spotlight Radio Network, joined by a very special guest on a very special day, and that is Mark D'Antonio. He's a nominee for the College Football Hall of Fame, and that should come as zero surprise to anyone who watched him at Michigan State with his 13 seasons, with the three Big Ten championships, college football playoff appearance. Mark, how are you?
Doing well, Jack. How you been?
Good. You know, every time I see you, I get a smile on my face, not just for all the memories of the football games, but because I hope that when I'm 96 and I retire, I look as happy as you do.
Well, been surrounded with great people and my great family and loving family. And, you know, my wife and I are living the grandparent life right now. So things are good.
Not that football is not an 80-hour week on the collegiate level, especially in the Big Ten, but I always thought you had as good a grip on faith, family, and football and the priorities of the job as just about anyone else. How did you do that? Where did you learn that?
Well, I think I learned that from Coach Tressel, really. I mean, you know, when I worked with him at Youngstown State and then again at Ohio State, you know, he had a way of putting things in perspective. And I think to truly be successful, you can't go all in one direction. You've got to be rounded. You got to be healthy. You've got to be take care of your health, exercise, things of that nature. If you're faith-driven, that's got to be a part of it. And then certainly you've got to work at your trade, your job. So we tried to do that. I tried to make that a priority, not just for myself, but for everybody who worked for us and then also who played for us. You know, so it wasn't just going to be about football, but football was going to be very, very important. But at the same time, we wanted to be at our best in other areas with the idea that that those things would carry over onto the field as well.
Mark, you'd been an assistant for a long time and very successful. Your stint here with Nick Saban and then going on to Ohio State and part of a national championship staff with Jim Tressel. And then you got the chance to be a head coach and then coming to Michigan State from Cincinnati. When did you realize, how long did it take before you thought, hey, you know what? We're going to do some big things here.
You know, really, I mean, in the first year, you know, when I came into the program, back into the program and saw the core players that were there, you know, they were hungry. They were willing to do whatever it took to succeed. And so we started with that and built it from there. But, you know, we started off, I think, 4-0, beat Notre Dame at Notre Dame. And then,
right.
So we started off fast, had a little lull in there, ended up winning 7 games, going to the bowl game and down the Champs Bowl and played in BC and, you know, Matt Ryan. And then the next year in 2008, you know, really we played our last game against Penn State for the Big Ten Championship.
Right.
Or at least a part of it. So we were 9-2 playing our last football game. And, you know, I knew that we could at that point that there were going to be great things on the horizon. Even though we didn't win that football game, we were in that position. And so the next time we did get in that position, which I think was 2010 at Penn State, we won it. And so it was sort of like that throughout the entire process. You know, we played in the Big Ten championship game against Wisconsin, came up a little short, played a great game, came up very, very short. But when we got back there in 13 against Ohio State, we had been there before, and we were ready at that time, primed.
You know, I think back to after your third season, Mark, and there was a little regression, as we see so often. We saw it last year with
Mel Tucker. Hard to win.
Yeah. And coming off a 7-loss year, and there were a lot of questions. And wham, you come out of the chute, and you went, you got 8-0 start, I know, when you go to Iowa. Mm-hmm. And I'm thinking about what that is like for a coach when you get some success, as you had in year two, as Mel had in year two, and then takes a step back, and maybe people start to say, well, are we rushing this a little bit? But you had the players there, and from then on, the next 6 years were amazing.
You know, I mean, it is, as I said earlier, it's extremely hard to win. It's extremely competitive in the Big Ten Conference. I mean, really, you're coaching against the best, playing against the best in the country. And you could make an argument for that. And so there's going to be tight games. And I think you're talking about the 2009 season, and there were some extremely close football games
right.
that we lost.
Right.
And, you know, that 6-6 team, and we lost the bowl game to Texas Tech. That 6-6 team could have very easily been a 9-3 team or a 10-2 team. So we knew we were close, just like coming off the 2012 season at 7-6.
Right.
We lost five games, by 13 points. So we knew we were close, and all we got to do is continually, and I say this all the time, you got somehow, some way, you got to find the inches. And you got to, that could be coaching, that could be playing, that could be luck, whatever it is. But you've got to find the inches if you're going to be a championship football program or basketball program or whatever it is. I mean, it's just the nature of college athletics at this level.
How tough is it, Mark, when you take over a program to build the culture and to make players believe in what you're telling them? Everyone's got a message. Everyone's got a pitch to make them think that, hey, this guy's being straight with me.
Yeah, the five cornerstones, and I've talked about this many times when I've done speaking engagements and et cetera, but the primary one is relationship. You've got to have a relationship with those young people, and they've got to trust you, and they've got to understand the commitment that's needed, and they've got to be able to communicate with each other, you and them and each other. So to me, that's primary. If you can't get that then it's going to be very difficult to get the other four done. So we worked extremely hard on doing that, and that was just being straight up with people and giving people, hope and giving people opportunities and working hard at it and coaching the little things, and had a great staff. And they all were difference makers as well. And so we just, inch by inch, we kept trying to move the needle. And I think that our players started believing in it. Again, we started off 4-0, but you could make a case for even John L's last year. They were close in some games, too, and they could have turned it around, too.
Right.
So again, it's just the inches.
One of the things that I think was impressive and important in terms of continuity is you acknowledge that. You had a different staff, obviously, and different philosophy than John L., but you didn't come in and trash the previous regime. We see that sometimes with the coaching change. And I think that when Mel came in, he understood what you had built. Sometimes you can have a coaching change and try to maintain some continuity.
Yeah, I think that's important. I've been very well received by Mel, and he was actually my graduate assistant at Michigan State.
Right.
And Brian Dable was his assistant, so, crazy. But and then again at Ohio State, he worked with us there, and won a championship together and things of that nature. So I knew Mel coming in, and I knew what he held to be true, and so there was some common core beliefs among the both of us. But I don't know, when you come in and there's change, there's always going to be some difficulty for people. But for me, when I came in 2007, I just embraced it all and said, let's get to work, and gave everybody opportunities and, let the ball lay where it laid, at the end of everything. But I gave people opportunities. They bought in. Again, we started 4-0.
Yeah.
And so, you've got instant credibility when you start winning.
I saw something recently, Mark, where I had the greatest games of your tenure. And I think you ranked them, or you evaluated which one stood out to you. I don't know, 25 of them. And
yeah, Jack, they asked for my top 10 plays that I had. And I was like, top, now I've been coached for 13 years, 12, 13 games a year.
Yeah.
And each game's got 70 plays in them, so you do the multiplication. I said, I can't pick those, but I can pick 25 maybe, moments that I felt were important to the program. So they weren't necessarily the most spectacular play, but they were program plays, and I felt like they led us to a place. And the number one play was that hit by Kyler Ellsworth in the Rose Bowl to win it, and so they led us to that point. And the college football playoff and things of that nature. So
I
tried to just sort of put it in perspective and talk through it. So there were some, you know, there were some the top runs, the top interceptions, the top sacks.
Sure.
Some of those type of things all were won.
The great part about
this. I enjoyed
that. Yeah, Mark, you could have a tremendous debate over this. And, you know, people get together and they're going to disagree. They're going to have their own favorites. For me, any of them, maybe the top 8 or 10 could have been number one. And
yeah.
I'm always going to have a soft spot for Woe Has Trouble with the Snap. And, you know, the book that we did as a result of that. But
yeah, it's a great book.
Yeah, thank you. I've heard so many people talk about where they were that day. And at the time when Jalen Watts Jackson had the ball, you and I thought maybe he would step out of bounds and set up a field goal.
Yeah, that's the nice thing about being retired, Jack, and they ask you that. You can make those choices yourself. So, you know, I just try to put it all in perspective. There's a lot of big plays out there, you know, that turn seasons and things of that nature. But I felt like those were the 25, so I enjoyed watching them. Big Ten Network did a great job.
I love the clip again. I love it every time I see it, of Little Giants. And they stayed with it for the handshake at the middle of the field with Brian Kelly. And first you see him and he turns to his assistant. He's like, what was that? And then, you know, that's something they certainly were not ever expecting. And then he had a little grin on his face like, well, you got me, Mark.
Yeah, you know, they lined up the same way every game during his time at Cincinnati. And then going into the game with us, they had lined up the same way at Notre Dame. And they had the same people. You know, so it was just a matter of, you know, drawing up something that would work against that schematic. So, you know, they worked.
You were known for that, for the unexpected, for the trick plays. It wasn't like you didn't believe in running the ball and conventional football, but there was always a D'Antonio special in there somewhere that we came to see. And there's nothing more special in terms of career accomplishments than the College Football Hall of Fame. I look at the list of all the people on the ballot, and the first thing I always say, Mark, is, that guy's not in? How come he's not in?
Mm-hmm.
But as a first-timer on the ballot, what does it mean to be nominated for your sports shrine?
Well, Ben Flieger, our SID, when I was there, you know, that worked with football, gave me a text yesterday and gave me a shout that this was happening, and then I, you know, left Alan Howler a message, and he got back to me. But it was a special moment. But, you know, I think that these individual awards, when I was named the Big Ten Coach of the Year and things of that nature, it speaks more about the program. It speaks to all the people that work towards success, the players, the coaches, the administration. There's so many people that are involved in a football program that if it's not you know, well greased, I don't know if I'm using that term right, but it's not working correctly.
Right.
You know, things don't happen. So it's an accumulation of a lot of hard work. When we came there, my goal was to build a program and a legacy type program, one that would stand for a while. And, you know, when people would look at it, they would say,
right,
hey, they did a great job or whatever, but they stood the test. It stood the test of time a little bit. Hopefully this will stand the test of time, but, you know, it was brought a big smile to my face yesterday because it was a little bit like job well done.
And that reflects on, as you say, all the coaches, all the support people, all the players,
sure,
everybody who was a part of it. And I think back to those 11-win seasons. You had five of them in a span of 6 years. And if you look at other programs around this conference, Mark, Iowa, in its proud history, has only had two. Purdue and Indiana combined, the Big Ten representatives from the Hoosier State, have never had an 11-win season. And Purdue's had one 10-win season, and Indiana's never had a 10-win season. So the fact that you had five 11-win seasons in that span speaks volumes. But I look at the list here, and you are not the only Spartan who is a candidate, a nominee this year, including a guy who was on the team when you were a Saban assistant. What do you remember about Flozell the Hotel Adams?
Oh, yeah, Flo. He's one big dude, man. Great person. Great football player. Dominant player in the NFL. Dominant player at Michigan State. And Jim Bowman, our offensive line coach at the time. And later, you know, I'm a co-offensive coordinator when I was here.
Right.
You know, did a tremendous job with them. And I think he weighed, all I remember is that he was running around the field in the indoor facility, you know, to get extra weight off. And I think at the time he weighed like 365 or something.
Wow.
So he probably got down to about 325.
Yeah. But he carried it pretty well. He was a 6'7".
Yeah, he's a good player.
Right? Yeah.
Good player and great person.
Yeah.
And, you know, he was, he put down a huge gift for our.
That's true.
For the stadium renovation.
That's true. Yeah.
With the recruiting room, with the new locker rooms over there and everything. So he did that, I think, in 2014.
There's also a name here. It's people remember from Spartan football of the 70s, Daryl Rogers. And he also very successful out in the West Coast, Arizona State, and then was the coach of the Detroit Lions and then wound up in Connecticut. But he's one of the guys who brought the passing game to the Big Ten.
Yeah, I tried to stay in touch with some of the past coaches, so I've talked to Daryl a number of times, you know, before he passed.
Yeah.
And, but he was another great coach. You know, Michigan State's one of those places. You're going to have good people here.
I see one other name here, and recognized not for his pioneering efforts at Michigan State as the first black player, Mark.
Gideon.
But Gideon Smith, as a coach, a lot of people don't even realize what kind of coach he was, but going in that category.
Yeah, you got to go way back. I saw him as a player. I didn't even know that he had coached.
Yeah.
Because he was the player and he played. But I think back then in the 30s, I mean, you basically sort of were synonymous as a coach-player.
Yeah.
I mean, I think guys sort of played and they coached as well sometimes. So.
I wanted to ask you, in this show we're doing today, and we're spotlighting the late, great Duane Vernon.
Mm-hmm.
Passed away a week ago.
Yeah.
And all of his contributions to Michigan State, I know what he thought of you. How important is a guy like that to the community, to an athletic program, and always, always positive?
Always positive. Extremely kind man. And, you know, went out of his way to accommodate you in anything you were trying to do. And he was a Spartan, you know, and lived over in Pentwater, I think, and I saw him on a lot of different occasions. He was always there, you know. Anytime there was a function, you could look around, you'd see Duane, and he was a guy that was going to do his very best to help Michigan State in every endeavor. So we'll miss him.
1999, Mark, and Nick had left, and you're getting ready to play Florida in the bowl game, and Bobby is running the show.
Mm-hmm.
And
I saw Bobby in Atlanta. He and Charlie Baggett.
Oh, good, good. We had Charlie on the show about a week
ago. Eddie Smith.
There you go. He was Daryl's quarterback, so that's a small world, good family. But Duane led a bus trip, a Kelly Dean Trailways bus trip, caravan, down to Florida. And you think, okay, well, you know, you get on a plane and go, but a lot of people couldn't do that, and so they said, well, we're going to get the fans down there one way or another. And they did. And they showed up in droves. And
yeah, they did. I remember that was our first, that had been the first Capital One Bowl.
Yeah, yeah.
And I think there were 35,000 Michigan State fans there. But Michigan State's always, those bowl games, they've always traveled well.
Right, right.
And it's been a celebration.
And that was quite a way to ring in the new century. The end of the 20th century and the start of the 21st. Can you tell us a little bit now about life, what you're doing? You're traveling a little bit, seeing friends. We saw you out at the golf course, out at Eagle Eye when they had the NCAA regional. What's life like for Mark D'Antonio?
Well, it's not 80-hour work weeks, that's for sure. So, you know, we live over Montague Whitehall, trying to golf a little bit. Probably in 16 years as a head coach, I probably golfed 10 times. Hmm. So you can imagine the state of my game.
Mel does that in a month.
Yeah, good for him. But we've got grandchildren now. My two daughters are grown up. You know, so we're with them. I'm with Becky all the time. We're doing things together, and so whatever I want to do is pretty much like that. And I've done some speaking engagements. Continue to do those. I spoke at the state of Michigan, I guess, prayer breakfast on May 17th. Talked about my faith a little bit, so that was something that was important for me to do. I'll come back to Michigan State in August and watch practice, and then also I'm going to go to Pitt and see Coach Narduzzi and go over and see Coach Pickle at Wisconsin. So I'll be around and probably stop in Northwestern. So I'll go around some different camps, maybe go to the Steelers and do some different things. But I'll get my football fix, but at the end of it all, I'm going to say, well, got to leave. Sorry, guys.
Right.
So enough.
Let somebody else handle the game day pressure, right?
Yeah. But there's different things as a family, taking trips and doing different things. So we're staying busy and always got a little project going, and always got a lot of people to talk to and things of that nature. And I hear from a lot of players, and, you know, there'll be, I don't know if I'm letting something out or not, but there'll be a Rose Bowl reunion, 10th reunion.
Oh, great.
So people are working on that. So I'll look forward to seeing our players, and I've tried to stay in touch with as many players as I can. You know, that's on and off, but quite often, coaches and players that have worked with me or things of that nature, you know.
I'll never forget the smile on your face, and they captured it on the sideline when Jeremy Langford split that Ohio State defense and iced that Big Ten championship game, and the camera found you right away, swung to you, and you're like, yeah, we got him.
Yeah, you know, that was an accumulation of 7 years of work. And, because when we came, I don't know if you remember when we came, you know, Mark Collis, our athletic director at the time, you know, made the statement at the press conference, we won't rest until our cleats are in the middle of the Rose Bowl.
Mm-hmm. Right, roses and, on the cleats, yeah.
And, so that was the mission. That was the mission that we were on, because I'd been raised up in the Big Ten. You know, I've been a graduate assistant at Purdue and Ohio State, and having coached Michigan State before. So, to go and be the best, you got to beat the best. And that Ohio State was the best at that time, probably still one of the top teams still to this day. But so there was a lot that went into doing that. When he split them, like you said, split those two tacklers, I knew right then that we were going to the Rose Bowl, and that was a special feeling.
It's always great to see you back here at games, and we know with this home schedule, there's a lot there. There's Washington coming in. They're a top 10 team, and Penn State, Michigan, of course. There's a game at Ohio State, but the Penn State game being moved to Detroit, and a lot of fans are kind of up in arms about that, but that's kind of the way of the world in 2023, and, you know, you have television obligations and league obligations, and
sure.
I think it's going to be better than sitting there and freezing people's butts off in Spartan Stadium.
Well, you know, Thanksgiving is a tough ticket. You know, when you're at Thanksgiving and you're sitting outside, it's tough to come up to Michigan State and spend the night and go through that whole thing. And I think that you're taking it to a bigger populated area. So I think you have a better chance. And, you know, the numbers, you know, I remember we were playing our last game of the season, you know, if we win, we clinch the Big Ten championship against Minnesota, and there were 55,000 fans there.
Right.
I was like, wow, what's going on?
Right.
So there's a little bit of that, but I think it's, we played Florida Atlantic down there. I think it'll be a good venue.
Yeah, right.
You know, Michigan State's 1-0
in Ford Field.
You've got to make tough decisions when you're the AD, the head football coach, whatever.
That's right.
And you're never going to please everybody, but you do the best you can.
Mark, something tells me that we might see you in Phoenix for the last game of the 23-24 basketball season. And Tommy Izzo gets the Spartans to his ninth Final Four. And if they get there, we already saw you at the NCAA tournament this year. We saw you in Gibby and the guys getting together before the game. And that would be an unbelievable experience for Tom to get another shot at a national title.
Yeah, it would. And he's done a great job. He's been tremendous, not only continuing to contact me and stay in touch with me constantly, but in what he's done for Michigan State as a as a leader at Michigan State. You know, I mean, in everything at Michigan State, it usually going to touch. He's going to touch something in that to make it a better situation. So he's been tremendously generous. And I told him, I said, when I retired, I said, I'm going to be that guy that puts a baseball hat on. I'll be sitting in the back row on the plane. So anytime you got an extra seat, I'll be on it. So we've had a good time. And, you know, Mel's been great, too. I've been to some away games and, Miami game the year before and then the Washington game last year. So, you know, I enjoy being around football, basketball, and being around young people.
We look forward to seeing you this season. Give our best to Becky and the family, and congratulations again on being nominated, being a candidate for the College Football Hall of Fame. We'll be right back with our tribute to Dwayne Vernon.